Hi, I'm Ewald Buchwein. I'm a postdoc at the Heidelberg Institute for Theoretical Studies, also known as HITS. And I will tell you about simulations of galaxy clusters and groups and what we can learn about HAN feedback and intercluster light. And collaborators that contributed to the results I will show are Deborah Sijatski, Volker Sprengel, Klaus Dolak, and Yu-Ying Zhang. So we performed simulations for a mass-selected sample of 21 clusters and groups that were selected from the Millennium simulation. And then we performed hydrodynamical resimulations of these objects. And for each halo, we performed two kinds of resimulations, namely simulations that employ a model for cooling, star formation, supernova feedback, and UV heating, and a second kind of simulation that additionally includes a model for black hole growth and AGN feedback. And the simulations were performed with quite high resolutions, and the goal of this project was to study how the intercluster medium and its X-ray properties are affected by active galactic nuclei, and how cluster galaxies are affected, and how the intercluster light forms. So this is a brief summary of how the AGN feedback model works. So black holes are seeded in halos once they exceed some threshold mass, and then they can grow either by mergers with other black holes or by accretion, where the accretion is prescription of the accretion is motivated by the Bondi Hall-Littleton accretion, and we use two modes of AGN feedback depending on the accretion rate. So for low accretion, for large accretion rates, larger than 1% of the Eddington ratio, we assume that the feedback happens in a quasar mode, where the coupling efficiency of the radiation that comes out to the intercluster medium is small. So we assume only an efficiency of 0.5% of the rest mass energy of the accreted gas that is injected into the intercluster medium. In the radio mode, which we use for small accretion rates, smaller than 1% of the Eddington rate, we assume a larger coupling for the basically a larger efficiency for the mechanical coupling of the jets of the AGNs to the intercluster medium. So we assume an efficiency of 2% of the accreted rest mass energy in this case. This feedback model leads to a self-regulated black hole growth and reproduces the black hole mass by stellar velocity dispersion relation as is shown here. So here the dashed line is the fit to remain at all data, and these are simulation results. So one thing we were very interested is how does the AGN feedback affect the gas fractions of our halos. So shown here is the X-ray temperature of the clusters and groups, and here the gas mass fraction within R500. For reference, this is the cosmic baryon fraction. All the blue circles are objects that were simulated without AGN feedback, and the red squares are objects that were simulated including AGN feedback, and the arrows indicate the effect of AGN heating for the individual systems. So you can see that at the high mass end, basically both kinds of simulations agree well with the data. So all the symbols with arrow bars and the small symbols here are observational results. But on the low mass end, there's a significant difference. So the AGN feedback significantly lowers gas mass fractions in groups and low mass clusters by driving this gas outside R500. And we get significantly different gas mass fractions on the group scale. Unfortunately, the observational constraints here are not very strong. So it's probably a better comparison to look at the X-ray luminosities of these systems, which we have done here. So this is the X-ray luminosity temperature scaling relation. Again, the blue symbols are the ones without AGN feedback, and the red ones are the simulations where the AGN feedback was included. At the high mass end, again, both kinds of simulations agree well with the observations. At the low mass end, the simulations without AGN feedback clearly overpredict the X-ray luminosity and are inconsistent with the data. However, when we include the AGN feedback, gas is removed from the centers of these objects, the X-ray luminosity is lowered, and we get a good agreement with the observed LT relation. So this is, I think, one of the major successes of this AGN model. Something else that we were interested in are the stellar components of our galaxy clusters and groups. So what we get from the simulation is something like this. We get the distribution of star particles in the cluster. However, to allow a careful comparison of this output of the simulation to observations, we need to assign the star particles in the simulations to the components that observers look at. So to the satellite galaxies, the BCG, or the intracluster light. So we need to find a way to assign the simulation star particles to these components. So as a first step, we use the subhalo finder, and then we consider all star particles that are part of a self-bound substructure to be part of a satellite galaxy. So this leaves us with all the star particles that are part of the main halo of the cluster or the group. And these star particles that are part of the main halo are subsequently either assigned to the BCG or to the intracluster light. The decision to which of these components we assign the star particle is not without ambiguities, and we tried in total 4 different methods for the BCG-ICL assignment of the star particles in the cluster's main halo. So these were used an empirically scaled BCG radius, such that stars within this radius are part of the BCG and stars outside are part of the ICL. We tried fitting the surface brightness profile with a steeper inner component and a more shallow outer component. We find 2 components in the velocity distribution of the stars, and we also use both the velocities and binding energies of the stars. And overall, we found that all these methods give the result that most of the stars in the cluster's main halo are actually part of the ICL and not of the BCG. So let's look at the BCG first. So these are BCG luminosities as a function of cluster mass. So the green symbols are observational results from Bobesso et al. 2007. And the blue results are the BCG luminosities of the cluster simulated without AGN feedback. So we have clearly 2 luminous central galaxies, which is just a consequence of the overcooling that we have in these kind of simulations. And the red symbols show the results when we include the AGN feedback. So we get significantly smaller BCG luminosities. They're in a good agreement with the data on the group scale. They are still somewhat high on the cluster scale, but they are definitely much better than without including AGN. So also in shutting off the central cooling flow and getting realistic central galaxies, the AGN feedback model helps a lot. And we also looked at the ages of the stellar populations in the galaxies. In the ones without AGN, we get ongoing star formation, basically till redshift 0 in the central galaxy, which gives a 2 blue and 2 bright central galaxy. While in the ones with AGN feedback, also the stellar populations in the BCG are old, and basically all stars in the BCG have formed before a redshift of 1. So we get, I think, much more realistic central galaxies with more realistic masses and more realistic colors when we include the AGN feedback. So this plot is a little bit busy. It summarizes basically the distribution of the bions in our clusters. Again, on the x-axis, we show the cluster mass. On the y-axis, we show the gas mass fraction within R500. The line up here is the cosmic bion fraction assumed in the simulations. All the blue symbols are results from simulations without AGN, and all the red symbols are results from simulations with AGN. So the circles on the top are the bion fraction. So the bion fraction in the halo bion fraction in the simulations without AGN are basically consistent with the cosmic value, even for small groups. So we don't lose any bions in these simulations. However, when you turn on the AGN feedback, we still recover roughly the cosmic bion fractions in the most massive clusters, but we lose a significant fraction of bions on the group scale. So we get smaller bion fractions in groups. Also shown with the square symbols here are the stars in our object. So this includes all the stars, galaxies, plus intercluster light. And you can see that the AGN feedback reduces the amount of stars we find. But in both cases, we get very flat dependence on halo mass, which, as Anne already told, seems to be significantly flatter than what observers tell us. the triangles show the results for our for both kinds of simulations, only looking at the stars and galaxies. So in this case, we roughly agree with the observations. So shown in by these symbols here are the Lin et al. 2003 results. We find roughly a rough agreement here. In very massive clusters, the total stellar fraction when comparing the Gonzalez et al. Result seems too high. And this is at least partly due to the very significant intercluster light component that we have in our simulations. So this is the figure that Thomas already mentioned in his talk. So these are new results by Yu-Ying Zhang, looking at 20 high flux clusters, where the masses were obtained from velocity dispersions, the gas masses from a joint XMM and ROSAT study, and stellar masses from SDSS. And we, and the black symbols show the halo baryon fractions, the red symbols show the gas fractions, and the green symbols show the stellar fractions, and also there a steep relation is favored, although with there's significant scatter. And the halo baryon fractions are in rough agreement with the simulations with AGN. So looking at the intracluster light fractions, they are summarized here. So the top panel is for runs with AGN, without AGN, sorry, and the bottom panel is for runs with AGN. And the red symbols show the fraction in the BCG plus ICL component, so all stars as a part of the main halo. The green symbols show the fraction of the stellar mass in the BCG for the four different methods that we tried. So you see that there's some scatter depending on the exact method we use, but overall only a small fraction of the stars that are in the BCG plus ICL component are actually in the BCG. And looking at the ICL fraction, so the difference between the green and the red symbols, we get something like 40 to 45% of intracluster light in these simulations, which is a lot, and we do not, contrary to what Anne told us, see a strong trend in with cluster mass. So we got basically constant intercluster light fraction as a function of halo mass. So how does this look like? For one cluster, all the green part, star particles are the one that we assign to the central galaxy. All the blue particles, star particles, are the ones that we assign to satellite galaxies. The red particles are the intercluster light. White particles are just other galaxies that are projected on the cluster. And the following movie shows how the intercluster light forms. So the colors here are the same as in the last figure. So all the green green stars will end up in the BCG at redshift zero. All the blue ones will end up in satellite galaxies. And all the red ones will end up in the ICL. And now by looking at this movie, you can see how the individual components assemble. So you can see that in these mergers, a lot of stars are liberated that become later part of the intercluster light. That basically the BCG is built from the most massive progenitors. And overall, you see that during the formation of this object, during mergers, stars are liberated from individual galaxies, become part of a loosely bound component of the merger remnant, which is then easily stripped when the merger remnant falls into the forming cluster. So the main conclusion of this project is that putting AGN feedback in simulation removes a significant fraction of baryons from the centers of Bohr clusters and groups. The X-ray luminosities decrease at the group scale and become compatible with the observed values so that we can reproduce the LXT relation. BCGs with more realistic stellar masses and old stellar populations are obtained, and more realistic total stellar fractions. For the ICL, we find very significant ICL fraction. The ICL fraction, which I didn't show it, but we checked that it's robust with respect to numerical resolution, integration accuracy, and significant changes in the star formation model. We reproduce the observed stellar fraction in groups. However, we get too many stars in clusters compared to observations, also due to a very significant ICL component. And we checked whether intercluster stars are stripped, and we found that they fall into the cluster mostly at redshifts larger than one, preferentially in massive galaxies to which they're only weakly bound. Thank you.
Okay, while Larry's setting up, we have time to take one or two questions.
What is the evolution of the luminosity temperature relation like in your clusters?
We haven't directly compared it to the data, so we have somewhat higher luminosities at higher redshift, but we haven't done a very careful analysis on the evolution yet.
If you apply on your simulated data, if you apply some kind of sensitivity limit in order to mimic observations, mm-hmm. could you reproduce the decrease in ICL fraction when you go to high mass because you're contaminated by background stuff or because your surface brightness decreases? Or?
So we haven't, we basically included all stars in our ICL components. We didn't make any surface brightness cutoff or something like that. But it would surely be interesting to compare this to individual studies and try to match the same flux limits that they have.
Okay.
Okay. Could you just, you mentioned that you do not see a steep ICL fraction with mass. And I think you meant, right, that the ICL fraction didn't vary steeply with the total mass of the system. Is that right? Or did you mean as a function of the stellar baryons?
Well, the ICL fraction is basically constant with the function of the stellar.
Yes,